why discourse is what where it's
it
at.
Is. Oh, it is.
This is why we have this is good. My only thing, and I respect everybody's individual opinion. You have a right to have your own opinion, but facts are facts, right? My question is, okay, so if we're gonna do this, if we're gonna say like, okay, we don't want to murder these children. We want these babies to be born. We want to bring them in. They have a heartbeat. They have this and they have that. Okay, so then why in America are we cutting the same programs that are supposed to help support these children, these families? We're cutting their health insurance. We're cutting education benefits. There's no free lunches. If we're talking about taking care of children, you can't just give birth and then the kid's here.
Mm-hmm.
You got to take care of that child too.
Yeah.
And if you're going to force people to give birth and have children, then you better have the basic necessities available to help raise and support that child if you're going to force a family to bring a child into this world.
Adam, thank you. We are running out of time. I want to thank the caller for letting us hear his perspective, whether we agree or not. You guys, when is the podcast starting? Do we know?
As soon as we can find time to sit in the same room and yell at each other.
Ty is my engineer. I want to thank both of these guys, Adam and Remy, for the Missing Middle podcast coming. You will hear more about them. Enjoy your day.
Thank you.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Melissa Lesniak, the creator and host of That Vegan Show. On That Vegan Show, you will hear in-depth guest interviews on vegan-related topics, such as companion animals, environmentalism, social issues, and food and nutrition. We also learn about specific animals, such as possums and rabbits, including their needs and ways to help them. Be sure to tune in to That Vegan Show on the fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m., right here on KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience produced at a different location every week.
Okay, so let's say that you were climbing one of these ladders and it feels kind of shaky. What do you do next? Like, how do you manage those kinds of risks? Because there are no adults, you know, your parents aren't here.
Yeah, so that is something that is different about a junkyard is there aren't really grown-ups allowed. There's a sturdy metal ladder right here. And
okay, take it sturdy in quotes, yep.
I mean, it doesn't look sturdy, but I don't know. It kind of feels like it's welded in, but I don't think it is.
I'm Gary Niederhoff, producer of Big Picture Science in Mountain View, California, where we draw surprising connections between the latest science and technology research to give you the big picture. Today on Sprouts, we hear about the evolutionary need to play and how risky play is especially important for kids. We start with host Molly Bentley, who visited an unusual playground in New York City.
We can all spot a children's playground. Chances are it has colored plastic slides and a walking bridge over an area strewn with wood chips. Such playgrounds have been designed for children to have fun, but moreover, to keep them safe while doing it. This playground looks very different. This looks like a junkyard. There are no molded plastic structures. Only old tires, some cut in half and filled with mud, rotten old boards, wheelbarrows, rickety ladders. The children over there are pounding nails. You're hammering real nails? Real nails into a board? Uh-huh. It's a scene that might terrify parents. So why do researchers studying children's development recommend dropping your child off here unsupervised? Well, to answer that, we might have to remember what it was like to have been a child.
You're hitting it and making it less sturdy. Yeah,
I'm Molly Bentley at an adventure playground in New York City.
The effort to remove all risk from children's play suggests we've lost sight of why children like to play in the first place, or for that matter, why any species likes to play. It's an important question because play is more than just fun. It has important evolutionary benefits, and we're not the only ones who like to roughhouse, to sled, or to chase a ball. And for listeners who have outgrown recess and playgrounds, when was the last time you felt like you had mindless fun? I'm Seth Shostak, and this is Big Picture Science from the SETI Institute. And as the bard said, the play's the thing.
David Toomey is professor of English at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, and he's the author of Kingdom of Play, What Ball-Bouncing Octopuses, Belly-Flopping Monkeys, and Mud-Sliding Elephants Reveal About Life Itself.
It may be that fun is necessary for some evolutionary reason. If one wants to put this in the context of evolution, one might ask, why did natural selection make play fun? That is to say, make play desirable. So in answer to the short answer to that question is no one knows, but it does seem that play should have an adaptive advantage. And the reason is that it has so many disadvantages. Play takes time that an animal might better spend doing something else, hunting or mating or foraging. It takes energy that an animal might better spend doing those things. And often it can be dangerous. So all these things would seem to be disadvantageous. So evolutionary biologists don't always know why all animals are playing, but they have reason to think that there is a reason.
Watching these children run over loose boards and collect scrap metal that they're putting in a rusted old wheelbarrow in this New York playground, well, it both gives me nostalgia for my unsupervised adventure-seeking childhood and a bit of anxiety in my stomach.
Wait, I'll do it. No, I don't want to do my shit.
Honestly, these rotten old wooden boards, these rusting metal ladders, an old stained mattress, and the other discarded objects that are lying around in the dirt make this look like an abandoned area that should be fenced off with a keep out sign. Of course, that would be catnip for kids, which is precisely the point. And one of the reasons these children are having a blast.
What we do is we take a bunch of these tubes and we just, we kind of just, made a tunnel with them.
We'll find out just what these children are getting up to and how that playground is a response to the trend of protecting children at any cost by ensuring that playtime is safe. Some have called it bruise-proofing. But we're learning that these efforts to eliminate risk, dubbed by one child researcher way back in the 1960s as an administrator's heaven and a child's hell, may be detrimental to children's development.
Hi, I'm Mariana Brussoni. I'm a professor at the University of British Columbia in the Faculty of Medicine, and I am a developmental psychologist studying children's outdoor risky play. You know, we didn't used to have a word for risky play. It's really a term that emerged around 2009 was when the first term first came into use. And what did we say before then? Well, we kind of didn't need to because play was play and risk was a natural part of that.
Mariana, I had a lot of unsupervised play in my childhood. Every weekend and summer day seemed to begin with the bang of the screen door after breakfast and didn't end until the street lamps came on. That seemed to be the norm back then.
Yeah, and you know, and that play memory has some really common themes to, you know, when you ask people to think back to their favorite play memory, it often involves kind of being outdoors, being unsupervised, taking risks, and just kind of making things up as you go along. So yeah, so and what did you think you get out of those kinds of play memories? What did it do for you?
Oh, you're asking me.
I'm asking you, yeah.
It that is a great question. It gave me a sense of confidence because I was nimble and I knew that I could do it, that I could set my mind on a goal and then I could execute it. And this had many parts to it, including like pinching, you know, a little bit of chocolate from the kitchen and then sneaking it back up to my room. It was exhilarating to climb up and down that tree, and it was just fun. I don't know how to describe fun, but it was fun.
Exactly. And so what you're describing is so common about these experiences, right? You can map everything you said onto really important aspects of children's development, health, and well-being. You know, you talked about being able to move your body and gain mastery over your body and understand what it was capable of. That's physical development, physical literacy skills. You talked about kind of building self-confidence in a sense that, I can do this and I'm capable and competent. So that's really important for mental health and well-being. You know, you talked about a sense of joy and fun. Those are really fundamental in terms of also kind of mental health and well-being. So even just your kind of small story and slice of what your childhood was like, you can see the layers of benefit that came from that.
For you, what do you remember from your childhood? Did you engage in some of this risky play?
You know, I'm a child. I grew up in the 70s and 80s. And so very typical of the time I was, you know, leave the house. If we stayed back, we would get stuck into chores. And so it was like, get out of the house as quickly as we could to make sure that we weren't stuck vacuuming or something. And my brothers and I would wander the neighborhood, and we had a river nearby. We would go and catch snakes and, to my mother's lack of delight, bring them back home and kind of wander around at will, for sure.
Well, you know, Mariana, when you describe going to the river and catching snakes, and then you imagine me up on a roof, this is something that our parents might have blanched at back then, but certainly today, these would be no-nos for children, I think, growing up in today's ultra-safe environment. Can you give us an overview in what ways we have limited such risky play for children? What is the new ethos?
Yeah, well, and it's a not so new ethos, because the change started happening in the late 80s, and there's a variety of reasons for that. But one of the things that we kind of point to is a change in parenting approach, right? And so this sense that they really had to curate their children's lives to make sure that they were in activities that were enriching their brains and so that they would get into kind of the right schools and into the right universities and so on. And so then it just became, play was seen as a waste of time. At the same time, we had a diminishing sense of children's competence, that they really needed adults to kind of control their lives and tell them what to do. And so the feeling that being a good parent was not only making sure your kids' brains were, you know, kind of developing in ideal ways, but also making sure that they were always supervised and in controlled activities so that they were, you know, what was perceived as safe.
Well, in some way, and you could describe for us, that translated into a change in playgrounds, for example. Now, I grew up playing on monkey bars at pretty questionable high heights, and jumping on those playground spinners that would go around where all the kids would pile on and they'd grab onto a bar for dear life because they didn't want to go flying off onto the gravel. And those play structures seem to have been replaced by what's called safety playgrounds. Playgrounds with plastic slides, with soft contours and structures that seem to limit a child's access to great heights or speeds. You could see the appeal for parents with these playgrounds.
Yeah. So the approach you're talking about is like let's make kids as safe as possible, rather than as safe as necessary, which is what we're going towards now. So as safe as possible means let's prevent everything. And so the playgrounds that developed, you know, from that thinking, as you identified, they're much lower in height. There's surfacing underneath that's meant to be soft surfacing. They're much more uniform. And, you know, generally they come out of a catalog and they all look the same. And there's very few what we call affordances for play. And so when we think about that, you know, some of the best things that provide high affordance are things that you can move around or natural materials. So like sticks, rocks, mud, tarps, crates.
In your case, snakes.
Snakes, exactly, yes. Yes. So things that kids could move around to allow their imagination to shape the play.
And we're going to talk about what the antidote to this has been. But Mariana, what have doctors and researchers noticed about children that suggested there was a problem? And what sort of evidence backs that up?
Right, yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, we needed a term for what was missing, and that's hence the term risky play. And that allowed us to do a whole bunch of research around what was missing. You know, and that's where I come back to your favorite childhood play memory. So what we've been able to show is that kids who are have less of these experiences are impacted in terms of these other aspects of their health and development. So we do see really robust findings around, you know, kids being less physically active and moving their bodies less, you know, being more sedentary, being more interested in engaging with friends, you know, online through screens, because that's more thrilling and exciting than what they're actually seeing outdoors. And we have this really interesting research around mental health impacts of this. For example, research showing that teens and young adults who had overprotective parents are more likely to be anxious and depressed. There's a challenge with self-confidence and feeling that they can manage things, you know, a kind of a sense of that the world and the uncertainties are too hard to handle, and so they tend to pull away from them rather than leaning in. And on and on and on. The research is building and building and building around what kids are missing if they're missing this kind of play.
You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm Gary Niederhoff, producer of Big Picture Science in Mountain View, California, and this week we're talking about the evolutionary need to play and how overly cautious parenting may not actually be in our children's best interests.
Well, one of the responses to the culture of caution has been the construction of adventure playgrounds like this one here on Governor's Island in New York called The Yard. It has risk built into every rickety structure, rotting board, and rusting bit of metal. There are no soft molded plastic slides or soft surfaces to cushion you if you fall. It's basically a junkyard. Kids are allowed inside. The parents are not. There is one rule: closed-toed shoes are required. Otherwise, the children make up the rules. There's a child just hitting a board with a stick really hard. There are rotten old boards, a whole pile of them here. Talk about Splinter City. Old ladders, some of them are rusted. The metal ones are rusted. The wooden ones look pretty rickety. It looks like one child here has found a piano, old piano. One child is just going by on a scooter there. It looks like a scooter from about 50 years ago.
Adventure playgrounds really grew out of post-World War Europe, right? So you had all of these kind of bombed out building sites within cities like London and others, and the kids started playing in them. And so there was a realization at the time, Lady Ellen of Hartwood was one of the people that really supported this, in terms of recognizing the incredible play opportunities that they offered, particularly for kids who had just come through a war and just needed the psychologically soothing aspect of play and how important play is for being able to manage, you know, trauma and those strong emotions and so on.
But one would imagine that these, you know, makeshift playgrounds would have broken glass in them and bricks, and just sounds like they would be actually quite dangerous places for children.
Yep, absolutely. And you should see some of the pictures coming out of them. They would be hair-raising to today's parents. But it started a whole lineage of the idea of adventure playgrounds, where you dedicated space in neighborhoods for what were essentially junkyards where kids could hang out.
And we have over here a huge bit of corrugated plastic drain pipe, big enough for an adult to crawl through, and of course a child with no problem. Hi, are you Jake?
Yes. Yeah,
it's nice to meet you, Jake.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
How old are you, Jake?
I am 11.
What's your favorite thing to do here at the yard?
Talk and play with my friends. And I love to explore, because every time I come, there's always something new. Mm-hmm.
Can you just give me a little tour here and just tell me what you see?
All around the yard, there are a bunch of wood piles. There's a mud pit.
Mud pit. Are you worried about getting splinters there in that wood pile?
Not really. I've never thought about that.
We have the Sky Fort, which is probably the tallest structure here.
The Sky Fort.
Yeah. Usually, right here, there would be a mattress, and then up on that platform, like, you'd stand on that platform, and then you would jump down onto the mattress.
So you're telling me that you jump from up there?
I'm pretty sure it's 10 feet. I have never done it. That pushes my limits.
I'm Yoni Kalai, the interim director and one of the co-founders of Playground NYC.
Well, and Yoni, you're one of the few adults that is allowed to go into the yard. That's a privileged position, as I understand. The parents aren't allowed in here.
That's right. We keep the parents out of the playground because we find that they try to control too much and not let them even get a little bit of mud on their shoes or their clothing. All sorts of things that they try to stop.
Guys, this is going to be a very shady house.
It's going to be a shady house?
Yes.
Yeah. You're hammering real nails? Real nails into a board?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Here's one.
There's a nail. Yep, that is a nail. Where did you find that? Was that on the ground?
Oh, no. There's a bunch of them on there.
Yeah.
The kids, just like you see the risk, the danger, they see it just as much as you do, and they don't want to get hurt. Nobody wants to get hurt.
To get up, there's a sturdy metal ladder right here. And
okay, taking it sturdy in quotes, yep.
I mean, it doesn't look sturdy, but up top, like, I have tried to test it to see if it'll fall down. This won't fall down. I mean, it's been here for a long time, but down here it's not really connected to anything because, you know, there's, like, dirt on the ground, but up there, it's tied, and I don't know, it kind of feels like it's welded in, but I don't think it is.
So to be clear, Marianne, while adventure playgrounds have been around for a long time, this is a recent intentional step to build these playgrounds, especially in urban areas, so that children can engage in risky, unsupervised play. This is a trend.
Well, it was a trend before, and it was in the 80s that they started shutting them down. And they're only now kind of coming back into fashion as we're realizing how important they are.
What strikes me is that as soon as they walked into the yard, we came over on the ferry with them, they just scattered and then just got into it, right? They grabbed something, they grabbed a wheelbarrow, they grabbed a tire or something or a stick, and they just started to play right away.
Yeah. Kids are the experts of play, and we as play workers are just trying to support their play.
She's splashing water all over herself from this bucket. Does that feel good?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, my goodness.
Hug?
Oh, hug? Yeah, I'll hug you. Thank you for that wet hug. Oh, my goodness. This is so fun. Well, among the groups that are recommending that we bring risky play back is the Canadian Pediatric Society, that is Canada's National Association of Pediatricians. They recently released a statement on the importance of risky play for children. And how does that translate into practical recommendations? What are they suggesting that parents do?
Yeah, I mean, it's super exciting that the Canadian Pediatric Society has come out with this statement. It's a very powerful statement to make. Essentially, what they've said is that they've urged their pediatrician members to add risky play to their clinical toolbox as a way of managing some of the major issues that they're seeing in their offices today. Things like obesity, anxiety, and behavioral problems.
You're testing out your strength? Whoa. What is that?
It's a giant ball. What's that?
This is a recorder. I don't think that's a ball. I think that's a like an old like oil drum. I think I saw as one of the rules for this new era of risky play is bruising is okay, but not bleeding.
it really, you know, people have different tolerance for their risk level. We actually did a study, some colleagues of mine, around what do we consider as a serious injury. They polled surgeons and medical professionals from across different aspects of the medicine to see what do they consider a serious injury. So things like broken arms and legs and even like stitches and all that were not considered serious injuries, because it's like those can be fixed, you know, and the kids will recuperate from those. And to, as I said before, to take in as safe as possible approach where you're trying to eliminate all of that stuff, you need to think about the cost involved in not allowing kids to do these things, right? Like, it, you know, one example is that the monkey bars in playgrounds, they're where most of the broken arms and things happen. So is the solution to get rid of monkey bars? Okay, well, where are kids supposed to build their upper body strength? Where are they supposed to get that kind of swinging sensation that's so beneficial to all aspects of kind of their joy and fun, right? So, like, we need to balance, right? And that's where we're really going for an as safe as necessary approach, where we're trying to control the most serious hazards and those that could lead to really serious injury and death, but leave the risks intact so kids can make a decision for themselves.
Okay, so let's say that you were climbing one of these ladders and it feels kind of shaky, or, you know, you're starting to lose your balance on something. What do you do next? Like, how do you manage those kinds of risks? Because there are no adults, you know, your parents aren't here.
Yeah, so that is something that is different about the junkyard, is there aren't really grown-ups allowed. And honestly, let's say I'm on a ladder and it starts to feel like, it starts to feel shaky, like that ladder, yeah. Like the ladder to up to the sky fort. What I would do is, if I was, like, I would check of which half I am. If I'm closer to the top of the sky fort, I would just keep going a little faster. But if I was closer to the bottom, then I would go down.
One downside of an adventure playground like this is that it does require a lot of space. This is much bigger than, you know, say the playground you'd find at a park or play structure. You would need more staff to maintain this. And there is a chance that kids will get hurt. So there are a few downsides to this kind of a playground.
I want to first address the part of getting hurt. Kids get hurt on normal playgrounds all the time. When you're a, let's say, 9-year-old who's been to your neighborhood playground for years, and it's always the same. You've done it a million times. It's not interesting anymore. You start using it in ways that the equipment has not been intended to be used, and nobody's supervising. And now you're jumping onto a rubberized surface, which you think absorbs the shock, but when you're jumping from 12 feet, 15 feet, it's not going to do anything for you. So our rate of injury is not anything more than regular playgrounds. There's a study that was done at the Adventure Playground in Houston, where they have a normal playground and an adventure playground on the school, and they found that the rate of injuries at the normal playground was actually higher. And as far as staff, yes, I think that it's better to pay people and not spend millions of dollars on play equipment when we repurpose all the materials instead of it going into the waste stream. Kids love to play with it. It's every time different. They get to change things. It's junk, so nobody feels precious about it. If it gets broken, it's fine.
You're going to relax now?
Uh-huh.
How much hammering do you think you did?
I did 2 nails.
Hey, Daddy.
You did 2 nails.
It takes a long time to do anyways, since they're like this long. Yeah, so then you have to hammer them in for a while.
Just for reference, that's about 4 inches. Yeah.
But what we see in the research is that kids are, you know, they're hanging out with each other. They're figuring out how to do things. There's not an adult telling them what to do. Things are going wrong and they're managing it. Things are going right and they're building self-confidence around that.
And what are you guys building here?
Yeah, we're just building shade.
You're building shade. That's very smart, because today is a very sunny day and it's supposed to get up to 80 degrees. I'm walking with the children back to the ferry to go back into Manhattan. They've all had a great time. Many of them are soaked wet because they figured out how to open up a hydrant, a fire hydrant there at the end. It feels pretty good, huh?
It does. It's really hot.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys have fun today?
Yeah,
we did.
Yeah.
A scale of 1 to 10 of fun, how much fun did you have?
10. 10.
Well, the joys of youth. Thanks to Mariana Brusoni, a developmental psychologist and professor at the University of British Columbia in the Faculty of Medicine.
Thanks also to Yoni Kalai, the interim director and one of the co-founders of Playground NYC, for allowing access to the playground, and to Jake's parents for granting us permission to talk with him, and to Jake for providing a fantastic tour of the yard.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to The Play's the Thing, an episode from Big Picture Science. Special thanks to our guests, David Toomey, Mariana Brusoni, and Yoni Kalai. Our contributors this week were, as always, hosts Molly Bentley and Seth Shostak. The show is produced with the assistance of Shannon Rose Geary and Brian Edwards, with further production, mixing, and editing by me, Gary Niederhoff. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller Ursula Rudenberg at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Gary Niederhoff in Mountain View, California. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
Hi, this is Frank with a PH and a hard C. Your basic average all-American Jewish lesbian folk singer. Coming out to you on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope.
Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show, we're exploring the balancing act between love, money, and the real pursuit.